Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Over on patreon.com, we have got a lot of new exclusive Bowery Boys audio for our super fans, including, of course, our regular Patreon-only show called Side Streets.
And at the $5.5 level and above, I've got a whole episode of bonus scenes from my recent Stories of Flushing show with many more interesting bits of history. Then at the $10 Gilded Age level, you'll get audio from my interview with author Eric J. Dolan, recorded at the New York Historical Society. We're talking privateers, pirates, and the American Revolution.
And that's not all. At that same level, you also get exclusive merchandise, new shows a couple of days before everybody else, and you get all of our podcasts ad-free.
You won't even hear this message. That's all on patreon.com/Bowery Boys.
Your support helps us keep the show running. Thank you so much.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Well, along with getting into shape, being more productive is a common goal people have. And while there are a ton of books and articles out there filled with productivity advice, which ones actually work? Well, my guest today took a year out of his life to test all the productivity advice out there and has written a book sharing what has worked for him. His name is Chris Bailey, and he's the author of the book, The Productivity Project, Accomplishing More by Managing Your Time, Attention, and Energy. And today on the show, Chris and I discuss the common misconceptions about productivity that lead people astray in their goals, why having a why is the most important step and becoming more productive, and why planning your day around your personal energy cycle can boost your productivity significantly. Chris also gives specific tactics about how to beat procrastination, strengthening your ability to focus. This episode is chock full of actionable advice, so take notes. After the show is over, check out the show notes at aom.is/productivityproject. Chris Bailey, welcome to the show.
Brett, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you wrote a book called The Productivity Project, where you took a year of your life to experiment with being more productive. You tried all sorts of different things, and then you cataloged it on your blog and then in your book. So I'm curious, why did you decide to take a year out of your life? You know, you could have taken, I think you had job offers on the table, but you passed those up to do this experiment. Why did you do this?
Well, somebody's got to do it, right? I mean, there's a lot of productivity advice out there, I think. And, you know, this life hack kind of space, there's this whole productivity sphere on the internet and in books and literature. And so I really wanted to take a year to follow this curiosity of mine. You know, some people have normal interests like cooking and politics and manliness and what shaving, you know, whatever gets people going. But for me, for some weird reason, I have no idea why. It might be the fact that both my parents are psychologists, which kind of makes me a bit of a weirdo, I guess. I've been into this idea of productivity. And I don't mean productivity as it's a word that has a lot of baggage attached to it. You know, people think of something that's so cold and corporate and all about reducing their life down to a spreadsheet. But the way I think of productivity and the way I've always thought of it is we only have so much time. And so the best productivity tactics exist to allow us to accomplish more in what limited time we have. And so I wanted to take a year. I looked at how much money I had in the bank because I'd worked up to that point so that I could receive a couple job offers. So I looked at how much I had in the bank. I didn't have a ton, but I thought if I eat a lot of beans and rice and live with my girlfriend for a year and really kind of slummed it, I could make it through a year or 12 months of following this curiosity of mine where I could separate the productivity advice out there, kind of work as a sieve in a way where, you know, take in all the research interview as many experts as would talk to me. Thankfully, more spoke to me as the project went on, and pored over journal articles and books to really filter out and experiment with what works and what doesn't.
So you weren't just looking at life hack blogs to get the ideas for your experiments. You were actually looking at scientific research and on the issue of the facets of productivity that are out there.
Well, I think you have to, because that's the thing about the best productivity advice is the best. Here's the thing about productivity advice, man. Like, you got to for all the time you spend reading or even listening to people like me ramble on about productivity advice, you have to make that time back and then some. Or else you're basically just looking at productivity porn. And there's a lot of productivity porn out there. And most life hacks are like, oh, fashion this pen to a paper clip and put it on your shoe and you can get more. That's a lot of hogwash that's built into tactics like that. Like, don't get me wrong. It's fun to read about. And I love reading about that stuff as much as the next guy. But really, I think where productivity earns its keep is in allowing us to basically get everything done that we have to, so we have more time for what's actually meaningful to us.
Right. So let's talk about how you kind of mentioned how you define productivity a bit. It's about getting more done in the limited time you have. But it seems like you have a broader definition of productivity, because most people, when they think productivity, they think time management. That's what I do. But what other facets of life do you incorporate in productivity?
That was the fascinating part of the productivity project, is I went into it thinking, okay, the way to become more productive is to work faster, harder, and manage my time better. But when I started zooming out, because when you start looking at the factors that go into something like productivity, you really begin to get a sense of the ingredients that contribute to exactly what allows us to get more done. And so when you start at that definition, if you started a different definition, you might come up with a different conclusion. But if you start with the definition of productivity, where it's how much we accomplish, and more than that, it's about accomplishing what we intended to do, because, that's the thing, too, is if we intend to have a really business-like day and submit a few TPS reports, whatever those are, and we intend to ace a job interview and ship a new product at work, and then we do, I would argue that we're perfectly productive. And the same is true if we intend to have a nice relax. Like, I got one of these coming up tomorrow. I can't wait. Tomorrow I've got a massage booked. I've got a few books ready to go. I have some academic papers that I'm going to read, because that's what I do for fun. Please send help. And that's what I intend to do. And I think if you intend to have a relaxing day on the beach and then you do, you're perfectly productive in those cases. But when you zoom out to look at the different ingredients that contribute to your success in that way, you realize that productivity is a lot more than just managing your time. Because if you can't focus on what you intended to do, it doesn't matter what you schedule. And the same is true for your energy levels, where if you intend to do this day and you burn out at 1 or 2 in the afternoon, your productivity is going to be toast. And that was kind of the model that I came up with by the end of the productivity project, is I realized that every single lesson that actually, earned its keep, that actually allowed me to earn the time back that I spent on it, fell into one of those three different categories: either a better managing my time, my attention, or my energy. And I think all three of these ingredients are crucial in our productivity.
And why is understanding that productivity is more than just time management important in our knowledge economy?
Well, because we no longer do work with our hands, we do it with our brains. And because we have such a limited pool of physiological energy in our brain, and we only have so much ability to focus, you've probably experienced that sensation where you're trying to hunker down on your work and you're staring at the same email for 10 or 15 minutes and looking at your response to it. And you just think, okay, man, I need a break. And then you step back from it. You get a coffee or something like that. You take a walk, and then you come back and you rewrite it in 2 minutes and send it. These ingredients are so crucial, because for that simple fact, we no longer just work with our hands. We do it with our brains now. And we need all the energy and all the focus that we can possibly bring to it. never mind the fact that we have more distractions and interruptions than we've ever had before in our history. This makes this more, I would say, holistic view of productivity, where it's the confluence of our time, attention, and energy more important.
Right. One of the things I love about your book, you start off very broad, big picture, the 10,000 mile view of things. And you argue that it's important for people to have a why of productivity. They need to have a purpose on why they're being productive. What happens if you try being productive without a purpose?
Well, this is one of the things that I found with the most productive people I encountered over the course of the project is the most productive executives, stay-at-home moms, whatever person you want to look at, they had a reason for investing in their productivity. And so the least productive people that I found are the ones who worked on autopilot mode. And you've probably felt yourself falling into that mode before, where your email inbox becomes your to-do list. You're working in response to the work that comes your way instead of setting a direction for where you want to go. And so knowing why we want to become more productive, I think, is crucial. And having a why before you invest in your productivity, I think it's essential to keep you motivated to keep going. For me, it's a sense of us only having so much time in our day to live our life. The clock is ticking. This is my reason. Your reason might be that you want to become vice president and have a massive house, or that you want to retire by the age of 40. Whatever your reason might be, in my case, it's that we only have so much time. We think we live until we're 90. I was thinking about this idea the other day, so it might come out, it might not, but this is one of those shower thoughts, when you kind of let your mind be. I was thinking about it the other day, and we think we live to 90, but we spend a third of our life sleeping, so we basically live to 60. We spend a third of our life working, so essentially we live until we're 30. And once you account for the household chores, the eating, the kind of maintenance stuff we do, we might have a lifespan of 10 or 20 years tops. And so I think that's why productivity exists, is because we only have so much time to live a meaningful life.
Right. So you focus a section about measuring productivity.
Yeah.
Because, right, there's that phrase, what gets measured gets managed.
Oh, man, that phrase. Oh, right. Makes me upset. Sorry.
It makes you upset. Okay, well, why does it make you upset? So, I mean, why is that?
Because in the knowledge economy, how do you measure knowledge work? You could have two programmers, and programmers are a good go-to example. You give them both an hour, and programmer A writes 800 lines of code, programmer B writes 20 lines of code. How do you measure their productivity? It looks like the programmer A, who wrote hundreds of lines of code, is infinitely more productive, when programmer B might have solved the problem in the first 5 minutes and solved it smarter, using more experience and knowledge than the first guy. And this is, I think, why measuring productivity is more of an art than a science in this way, where when it's about how much we accomplish rather than any other factor, it's more difficult to manage in that way. Like, you look at where we used to work, when we used to work in more of a, I call it the time economy in the productivity project, where there was a direct relationship between how many hours we worked and exactly how productive we were. If we worked 1 hour on an assembly line, we shipped 10 widgets. If we worked 10 hours on that same assembly line, we can do 100 widgets. Simple math because it's hard to do math live on a podcast. But today, the connection between how long we work for and how much we accomplish has been severed, because we can invest more in cultivating how much energy we have, and we can focus deeper on our work and get 2 hours of work accomplished in 30 minutes if we invest in our productivity the right way. And productivity tactics that allow us to do that are elusive. I experimented with hundreds of them over the course of the project, and I probably whittled it down to about 20 or 25 in the book, because these tactics are hard to find, but the best ones allow us to you know, take a step back and think about what's actually important.
Right. So you're, I mean, it sounds like you're saying you can't measure productivity, or is there a metric you can use, or are you just sort of, if you get the stuff done that you needed to get done, you are being productive?
I would say that. And the way I measure my productivity is I keep an accomplishments list. And so throughout the week, whenever I make a milestone in, you know, in a certain project, whenever I knock something out of the park, whenever I ship something, I put it on the accomplishments list and I look back on that at the end of the week. And, you know, this goes to the idea that, and I fall into this trap all the time, by the way, where the idea that we want to invest in our productivity, where we want to become more productive, on a certain level implies that we're not entirely satisfied with where we're at already. And it's kind of a problem to rectify, frankly, when it comes to investing in our productivity. But I've found that keeping this list allows me to really align what I'm doing over the course of the day to what will actually allow me to achieve more rather than just do more. Because, you know, when that connection between how long we work and how much we accomplish has been severed, you know, that idea of looking at how much we accomplish has never been more important. And this is what bugs me about a lot of traditional team environments, by the way. I was speaking at Google last week, and the way they manage their employees at Google is fascinating, because they don't look at how many hours the employees there work. Because, you know, somebody could work 8 to 4, somebody could work 10 to 6. It doesn't really matter. What matters is how much they accomplish. And that's really what they look at the end of the day. And, you know, if there's a pet peeve that I have with the way we manage each other in organizations and, you know, the way we manage our own productivity, it's that we look at what we do rather than how much we accomplish. And that's the thing about busyness, right? Is busyness is really no different from laziness when it doesn't lead us to accomplish more over the course of the day. Because we could be busy answering email all day long, or we could be busy checking social media all day long. But because not all tasks in our work are created equal, we have to separate what's important from what isn't and really align ourselves to work on that instead, I think.
Well, that's great. That's a great segue to my next question. How do you figure out what's important and what's not important?
Nothing like a good segue, right?
Yeah.
Am I right? The way I like to do this, and it's difficult to invest in your productivity if you don't first take a step back and consider what you actually want to become more productive on. And I think that's the thing a lot of people miss with the whole life hack space and productivity advice space, is you have to have a good sense of what's actually important in your work. Because when you get right down to it, you don't get paid to check email. You don't get paid to be on social media. You don't get paid to be busy. You get paid to do a small number of things. Usually, most people in the knowledge economy, where we trade our knowledge and our productivity for a paycheck as opposed to just our time, we get paid to do more complex work. And so I think one of the best things, and I write about this in the book, but I'll give you kind of the Coles Notes or the Cliff Notes summary. I'm in Canada, so I accidentally dropped these Canadian references like Coles Notes. We're getting 20 centimeters of snow today, by the way, in November. It's absolutely disgusting. But what I think one of the best things that you can do before you invest in your productivity is make a list of every single activity you do in your work over the course of a month. And once you, this is freeing in and of itself, by the way, because how often do you step back and think, okay, what am I actually doing here? But once you have that list, ask yourself, if I can only do one thing on this list day in, day out, every day, all day, which of these would allow me to accomplish the most? Which of these is the most meaningful? And that is the most productive task in your work. Because again, productivity is how much we accomplish, not how much we produce. And it, more than that, it's about working deliberately and with more intentionality behind what we're doing. So taking this step back and thinking about what's important is crucial. And once you get the first one, once you got that list, think, okay, what's the second most valuable activity that I'm actually doing here? And what's the third most valuable? And you'll probably find that after you've picked 2, 3, in some cases even 4 activities that are central in your work, your productivity after that will drop off a cliff, because we really, in our work today, only a few things are important. It's mentoring new employees, it's writing code, it's writing, so whatever it is that's central in our work, and everything in addition to that either supports our work, like email and instant messaging and calls and meetings, or it can be eliminated or delegated entirely. So that's, long answer aside, that's one of the most valuable things. And it's kind of tedious, right? But it feels good after you do this, because you get a signal of what's important.
So let's say you figure out what your 3 or 4 things that are the most important in your work. And you mentioned, like, with the other stuff that's not so important, you either delegate or eliminate it. What do you do with the stuff that you can't delegate or eliminate? How can you manage that more effectively?
Like email?
Yeah.
Like meetings?
Yeah.
Oh, meetings. Man. Yeah. Do you have a lot of email? How do you deal? I'm curious, like, what your email situation is like.
I don't get too much email.
No?
I've made myself hard to get to.
I have it. I'm going to send you like 5 or 10 emails a day now.
Right. Well, you have my email.
Hey, Brad, how's it going?
Hey, bro. No, like on my contact form, I don't have a contact form. I have my post office box address.
Oh, that's cool. Do people send you like handwritten?
Yeah. And people send handwritten letters, which I mean, most of the email I was getting through that form were PR stuff.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I put that buffer up, it like that just almost disappeared.
Oh man, I need to get me some of that, because I probably get similar situation as you, 50, 100 PR messages every day.
Yeah,
where it's just,
I don't get that. Archive.
But yeah, things like that in our work, like email, like meetings, we can't get rid of email, right? Nobody in their right mind gets rid of email. But when we can't eliminate something entirely, we can either delegate it. So I have my assistant kind of comb through my emails to archive anything that's selfish or anything that's too promotional, so that I can deal with the rest. I check my email once every day at 3 p.m. But the better way to do this, and the more realistic way to do this instead of delegating, is to shrink how much time and attention we spend on these tasks instead of delegating them. And so, scheduling windows throughout the day to check your email. I think a good place to start with this, because, it's so difficult to make drastic changes like these overnight. If you can't, set up a P.O. box, because that's kind of a cool idea. I might have to do that. I might steal that, man. simply notice how many times you check email over the course of the day automatically, because chances are the number is a lot higher than you think. I think it was Rescue Time that looked at how many times over the course of the day knowledge workers checked email, and they checked it an average of 41 times. And when I saw this stat, I thought, there's no way I check my email 41 times. And so I made a little tally myself, and I checked it like 35 times. It was ridiculous, because email is this, we get so much validation and stimulation from checking it. We get, it fires up every emotion in us. And so by pre-deciding when we're going to invest our time into something like this, we can level up and become a lot more productive. I have an autoresponder where if somebody emails me, it says, I only check my email once a day at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'll get to your message then. And it's simple. And people seem to not be too upset about it, because they realize that email isn't an important and vital aspect of our work. It feels important and vital, but as long as somebody gets a response and doesn't have to wait forever for it, we can level up and become more productive that way. So by pre-deciding and how we're going to shrink these elements, I have a kind of a VIP email where the people that are I work more closely with, like my publisher, like my agents, like my assistant, they have access to this email address, so they can ping me throughout the day, and I can correspond with them that way. But everybody else, you know, it's kind of a filter in that way, where I've pre-decided how I'm going to shrink these elements and deal with them that way.
All right. So batch the email, only check it a few times a day, and just focus on email, and that's it. And I guess another thing with that is, like, don't use your email as a to-do list.
Yeah.
I think that's what a lot of people, that trips me up often, is that's what keeps me in my email all the time, is I'm using it as a to-do list.
Yeah. And it's a tough habit to break, but it's one that's worth breaking, you know, and it seems like an extra step, right? You know, you get an email which has something you have to action, and then you take that and you put it on your to-do list. It seems like more hassle than it's worth, but you got to realize that when we're constantly tapped into this world of email, I think as Gloria Mark, she's an attention researcher I spoke with in the project, she found that when we're totally interrupted in our work, we can lose as much as 25 minutes of productivity because of that interruption. So when we have email notifications popping up into the corner of our screen and buzzing us on our phone, that can derail our productivity a lot more than we think, especially when it requires our full attention to deal with. And so it might seem more efficient to use your email as a to-do list, but it really isn't in practice.
And what about
the
maintenance?
Hear that siren?
Is that a siren?
It's a mess today here in snowy Ottawa. It's like the first snowfall of the season. You would think us Canadians would have this stuff down, where we get snow and we shovel it, but
having troubles.
Drivers, right?
Drivers. Well, we've been talking about work stuff, but like, what about like just life maintenance stuff, like grocery shopping, cleaning, cooking, you know, paying bills, making appointments? I mean, some people, they can hire personal assistants to take care of that stuff, and they have the money to outsource a lot of this stuff. But like, what if you don't? How can you be more effective so it doesn't take up, it doesn't interrupt your day and allows you to focus more on what's more important?
Well, these are kind of those maintenance tasks, right? Like things we have to do to live a reasonable life that don't necessarily progress our life forward in any ways. And so things like, like you said, making appointments, like cooking meals for the week, which I like to do every Sunday, like cleaning up around the house, like doing grocery shopping and chores around the city. What I like to do with these things is I've been annoyed by these types of tasks for a while. As somebody who's into productivity, you know, I don't want to be a slob, right? You got to shave, you got to do beard maintenance and stuff like that. But at the same time, these don't progress your life forward in any meaningful way. And so, you know, it's funny, we're just chatting about batching, because the best way I've found to deal with these is to batch them all together. I like to do this on Sunday afternoon. Yesterday, I made myself a couple cups of coffee, not at once. You know, I made one and then drank it. Then I made another cup with an Aero. Have you tried an AeroPress, by the way?
No, I have not. I know we've written about them before.
Oh, I'm sure. It's very like in the vein of what you guys write about. It's the best cup of coffee. In fact, save yourself some money by not buying my book and buy an AeroPress instead. Actually, they work well together. You know, I make a cup of coffee on Sunday afternoon. And what I do is I sip on this while I go through my maintenance day list. And so this has everything like setting a few intentions for the week ahead, like cleaning up, like doing groceries, like preparing lunches for the week, which I do with my girlfriend, like doing any errands that happen to accumulate. And the idea behind this ritual is, first of all, you feel amazing when your whole house is clean, and also your mental space is clean, because there's a direct relationship between how clean our environment is and how clearly we think. In fact, you know, I'm kind of nerding out about this idea right now. If you want to be creative, you have to go into a messy room, because the more scattered the physical environment is, the more scattered your mental environment is too, and the more disparate your ideas and the connections you'll make will be. But the opposite is true too. You feel more mental clarity when you're in a clean environment, but that's kind of a tangent, obviously. So Sunday afternoon, I lump all these tasks together. I don't do them throughout the week. I even have things like cutting nails on my maintenance day list because I don't want to do that throughout the week. I want to make it a ritual of doing it on Sunday. And you feel like you're propelled into the week ahead when you tackle this ritual. It's frankly, it feels kind of weird to talk about, but it is one of my favorite weekly rituals at home because you feel like you're starting the week with a blank slate and a fresh slate. And when you set intentions at the same time, you know exactly what you want to accomplish in the week ahead.
All right. So batch everything and just focus on those tasks on a single day. One of the things I found interesting about your book is that the theme is just focus on one thing at a time. Because I think most people, when they think I got to get more done, I have to juggle multiple tasks at the same time, multitasking. But you talk about in your book, the research suggests that multitasking is probably the biggest productivity killer, and you should just monotask or just focus on one task at a time.
Yeah, and this is, I think, one of the best ways to become more productive in the moment. You know, if taking a step back and, you know, one of my intention setting rituals that I love is the rule of three. I do that every morning. We can chat about it in a sec. But once you've figured out what's important, it's on a moment by moment basis that you work towards those goals. It's not on a general basis. This is why so many New Year's resolutions fall apart, is we make these grand intentions at the start of the year, but in the moment, you know, we one part of us knows we want a six pack by the summer, and the other part of us wants to eat a cheeseburger and, you know, veg out with a bag of chips watching Netflix. And so it's in the moment that we actually become more productive. And the thing about the way our attention is wired is we don't have a lot of focus to give to the world around us. One of my favorite studies shows that our brain is processing, it has the ability to process 11 million bits every second. That's how much information it's being bombarded in terms of the nerve endings in our brain every single second, 11 million. But in any given moment, we can only consciously focus on 40 bits of information. And so you can kind of look around when you're listening to this podcast, you know, what you have in front of you, what you're doing right now. Maybe you're in front of your computer, you can see that. Maybe you're going on a walk, maybe you're at the gym. In the room that you're in right now, there are thousands of things that you can focus on, individual thoughts going on in your head, objects in your environment, but you can only consciously focus on 40. And so the amount of attention we have to give to what's in front of us is very, very constrained. And, you know, the idea that multitasking doesn't work is a bit of a myth, frankly, but in only a certain way, where we can multitask on habitual things. So things that don't take conscious energy. You know, you can breathe while you're working, thank God. You know, we do habits automatically without much thought, so they don't take up too much attentional space. We can walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. We can even do habitual tasks on the computer, like, you know, reading the news while doing a bit of habitual email even. But the most vital tasks in our work, the ones if you did the activity we were chatting about where you take a step back and filter out what's important from what isn't, those most vital tasks in your work, regardless of the work you do, are so important because they take more of your attention and more of your energy. And if you're productive, more of your time than any other task in your work. And most people, 1% of people, these super taskers are able to do this, maybe even less than 1%. But most people can't actively focus on more than one of these at one time, because for the simple fact that your productivity benefits the more attention you focus on these. And they're more detailed, they're more immersive, they take more focus to do right. And so this is why multitasking doesn't work, is because the most productive tasks in our work require more of us.
It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about. I was able to cancel them, and I was able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness. rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, MANLINESS. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. There have been a lot of amazing people as guests on this podcast, but what if you want to go deeper? If you're looking somewhere to learn from the most remarkable people, that's Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, and they have over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. For example, Chris Voss has a class on negotiation, Jocko Willink has a class on leadership, and Malcolm Gladwell has a class on writing. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. One class that I've really enjoyed is the one with Chris Voss on negotiation. My favorite lesson in that class was the lesson on tactical empathy, something we talked about in the podcast that we did with him a long time ago, but he goes in deeper with this. And besides just the lectures, you get exercises so you can actually put this stuff into practice. Right now, listeners will get an additional 15% off annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. Masterclass.com/AOM. So that's why you argue, instead of like having this massive to-do list in front of you where you're just kind of clicking off, you know, checking off things, just narrow your to-do list to 3 big tasks a day.
Yeah. And this is called the rule of three. And it's one of my favorite rituals. And here it is. And this is, you know, it's a simple thing that you can action right away that, you know, again, you have to earn the time you spend investing in productivity advice back. This you'll earn back 100 times over every morning. At the start of the day, you fast forward to the end of the day in your head and you ask yourself, by the time this day is done, what 3 main things will I want to have accomplished? And it does a number of things. It sounds like kind of a simple rule, but it excuse me, at one time, it allows you to separate what's important that day from what isn't. And unlike a lot of other systems where, you know, it takes hours to organize everything on your plate and you lose a lot of time in actually working and actually being productive on those things, it only takes 3-4 minutes every morning where you define these three things and you separate what's important from what isn't. And you can consider your constraints at the same time. So, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I work for myself. I have a lot of autonomy in my work, as you likely do too. And we have more flexibility and more control over what we intend to accomplish, but we can consider the constraints. And so if we have a full day of meetings, or if we're working a job where we don't have total freedom and flexibility with how we spend our time, attention, and energy, we can adjust our schedule accordingly and our attentions accordingly. And sometimes our day will inform what we intend to accomplish. And so this is kind of, you know, these three tactics. And by the way, at the start of the day, I do this. And also at the start of the week, every Sunday, I define my three weekly intentions for work and for home. So this is how I get some modicum of balance for the week ahead. And this is the idea, you know, that we don't work on autopilot to become more productive. We work deliberately and with intention to become more productive. It's kind of where that idea filters down. And so we start by looking at what's important in general in our work. Then we look at what's important every week. Then we look at what we intend to do every day. And, you know, if we only did three things all day, every day, we probably wouldn't have a job after much of a period of time. So we need a to-do list, I think, in conjunction with this to manage what we have to get done. But when we bring that down to the moment where we work on one thing at one time, especially when we have the most energy throughout the day, that I think is the stuff that productivity dreams are made of. And, you know, I'm a bit of a nerd about this stuff, so I might be a bit more into this than some other people, but that excites me more than anything, because that's how we actually achieve our broader goals. And that's actually how we accomplish more, because when we do those three things, we can choose what's important and actually act towards that every day and every moment.
We'll talk about energy management here in a bit, but let's talk about procrastination. Let's say you have some task on your rule of three list that's super boring. It's hard, but it's completely vital in order for you to progress to where you want to get. And so you just put it off and you put it off and you put it off. So why do we procrastinate? Is it because stuff is boring and hard? Or is there something else to why we procrastinate?
Yeah, let's look at, like, what's something you're procrastinating on right now? I'll put you on the spot.
Let's see. I'm procrastinating on making some edits to a book that we're publishing here pretty soon.
Oh, nice. So you look at a task like that, making edits to a book. And, you know, I found the same thing when I was editing my book or looking over the edits that other people made. It turns out that there are certain attributes a task can have that make us more likely to procrastinate on it. And there's, if I remember right, there's seven of them. And I'm going to try to remember them here. Those are whether a task, like you said, is boring. And so, you know, editing a book, pretty boring. It's frustrating. Whether it's difficult, whether it lacks personal meaning, whether it lacks intrinsic reward, so it's not rewarding in and of itself, whether it's ambiguous, or whether it's unstructured. And so the more of these triggers, essentially, a task has, the more likely you are to put it off. So editing a book, it's pretty boring. It's a bit frustrating because, you know, it requires a lot of attention. It's difficult. You know, it might be difficult, but it might be more tedious than difficult. It's not really rewarding in and of itself because books are pretty long, as people know. It's pretty ambiguous and it's definitely unstructured. And so this is why we procrastinate on stuff. You know, you look at something that you don't procrastinate on, like watching Netflix as an example. You know, I wouldn't know anything about that, but, you know, watching Netflix doesn't have any of these. It's not boring. It's not frustrating. It's not difficult at all. It probably lacks personal meaning. So, you know, unless you're watching like nature documentaries or something, it's not ambiguous. It's not unstructured. In fact, it's so structured that you get like a little preview of the next episode and it automatically starts playing before you're finished watching the current episode. Again, you know, as a productivity expert, I only know this from the research that I've done, obviously. But you know, it doesn't have any of these triggers. And so we don't put it off. You know, doing our taxes has most of them. But by using this science behind why we procrastinate, it turns out that we can actually flip these triggers around. So if editing the book is boring, if you find yourself putting it off, you know, you can make a plan to reverse that. So if it's boring, you can go to a fancy cafe and get a latte. You know, it's almost, you know, Christmas here. And so maybe you can get like one of those candy cane lattes or something. I had a rosemary latte the other day. You know, like rosemary, the herb, it's pretty good in Ottawa here. If anybody's in Ottawa, email me and I'll let you know the place. So you can make it less boring by doing that. That makes it less frustrating at the same time. If it's unstructured, you can make a plan over the next, say, 2 weeks to do chapter one this day and chapter two this day and make a schedule for when you're going to do these things. And by making this plan and setting these intentions, you can actually reverse the triggers around and make it a more enjoyable experience and less likely that you'll put it off.
Fantastic. Any other tactics besides tweaking the triggers to reduce procrastination?
Part of it is thinking about your future self at the same time. This is one of my favorite tactics, and it's kind of a weird one. But we are so disconnected with our future self, which is basically just ourself, but in the future. In front of me here on my desk, I have a nice framed picture of myself, as most egotistical people do. But this picture of myself is of a 60-year-old version of me. And I had this picture done up and framed. I actually got a fracture done where they print the picture onto glass. It's pretty cool. And it sits on my desk all day so that I can consider myself in the future. And it's kind of a simple cue. But so often we put stuff off because we're disconnected with our future self. And so this is why we have a bunch of, you know, to work off the Netflix theme here. I've been watching a lot of Netflix this weekend, especially I was reorganizing my filing cabinet on maintenance day yesterday. And so I got through a few episodes of shows. But this is why we have like documentaries that we're bound to watch someday. We buy all these classic books and then we end up reading, you know, the trashy books or listening to other stuff instead or watching TV, because we're disconnected with this idea of our future self. And in fact, if you wheeled yourself, Brett, into a brain scanning machine, into an fMRI machine, and you know, I told you, Brett, you know, think about yourself, but in 20 or 30 years, and then think of George Clooney. The fascinating thing about these brain scans would be that they were basically identical to one another. And so we basically view our future self as a stranger, which is why we put stuff off. This is why we agree to, you know, where we wouldn't want to have coffee with somebody tomorrow. We agree to coffee with them 3 weeks from now. This is why we sign up for weird courses and stuff down the line where we wouldn't want to necessarily do it next week. And so by considering the idea that in the future, we'll basically be as we are now, except, you know, maybe a little bit more productive and successful, we can consider the idea that chances are, you know, we won't have an infinite amount of energy later on. Chances are we won't have boundless time. Maybe we'll even have less time if the trend continues, or more time if we invest in our productivity. And we can consider the idea that most things are worth doing right away.
Right. Okay. That's fantastic. So let's talk about managing energy. Because you say that productivity isn't just about managing time. It's also about managing your energy as well. So you argue that you need to, in order to be the most productive you can be, you need to work in your biological prime time.
Oh, yes.
So how do we figure out what these prime times are first?
I did it kind of an intense way in the productivity project, because, you know, why not, right? I only had a year to do this stuff. So what I did for the span of 3 weeks, and I did a little prep before, I cut out caffeine, I cut out alcohol, I cut out sugary foods because they kind of spike and influence your energy levels and then you crash. I ate small meals so that my energy was frequent throughout the day. I woke up and fell asleep naturally, because all of these ingredients influence how much energy we have over the course of the day. And after I cut these out, and caffeine I cut out beforehand because it takes our body a little while to catch up and kind of beat the procrastinate or the caffeine withdrawal, is I charted how much energy I had out of 10 every single hour, every single day for 3 weeks. Excuse me. And then, excuse me, I need some more coffee, I think. And then I charted how much energy I had. And I looked at how much the kind of trend lines over the course of these 3 weeks. And I found something remarkable. And it was that without fail, there were natural patterns to my energy levels over the course of this time. And so I found between the hours of 10 and noon, and 5 and 8 p.m., I had more energy than in any other hour of the day. And I did a bit of digging into this, and part of it depends on our chronotype, which you might have heard of, which basically dictates how much energy we have over the course of the day. And so morning birds, these people who rise at, you know, 5 a.m. to meditate and do yoga and stuff like that, they have more energy early on in the day. Other people who kind of half stumble out of bed and struggle to get by, like me. you know, I'm one of these people who works late into the night because that's when I have the most energy. We have more energy later on in the day. And so the idea is, by getting a sense and a feel for when we naturally have the most energy, we can adjust our schedule accordingly and shape it around when we naturally are the most productive. Because there's a direct connection between how much energy we have and how productive we are. The more energy we bring to our work, the more we're going to accomplish. And because, as we were chatting, not all tasks in our work are created equal, when we do our most vital tasks, like the three intentions that we set at the start of the day, when we naturally have the most energy, so I like to do my three daily intentions between 10 and noon and between 5 and 8 p.m. And that's because I want those to be as productive as possible, and I want to do as good of a job as I possibly can on them. And tasks like email, you know, I check my email every day at 3 p.m. for the simple fact that I have the least amount of energy then, and email isn't that vital of a task for me. And so we usually don't have total control and flexibility over how we manage our schedule over the course of the day, but we usually have some. You know, we can come in a bit later into work if we have flex hours and we're more productive later on in the day, or we can show up at 7 a.m., not p.m., and be productive in those hours if we find we have the most energy then. And so the idea is that by shaping, you know, all hours of the day, not all hours of the day are created equal. You know, there are some when we're naturally more productive than in others. And by shaping our schedule around those hours, we can level up to become even more productive that way.
Great stuff. Yeah, I've been trying to do a better job of scheduling my work around my energy levels. I know that I'm more focused in the morning, like mid-morning. So I try to do more of my writing during those times. And then, yeah, email I save for whenever I'm just like...
Are you a morning bird, would you say? Like, what time do you usually get up at?
I feel like I used to be a morning bird, but I've slowly shifted to being a night owl for some reason. I don't know why. I've kind of just let it happen.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, maybe you were trying to force waking up early into your schedule. And this is what I found, because our chronotype and the way we're wired stays pretty consistent over time. And I think a lot of people like the idea of being an early riser. And I did dozens of productivity experiments over the course of the project, and, you know, things like living in isolation for 10 days. I meditated for 35 hours 1 week. I became a total slob for another week, all in the name of productivity. But another one of them was waking up at 5:30 every day. And it took me a few months to kind of wedge this schedule and this routine into my life. And I finally had it though, a few months into this. The ideal routine that I thought, at least, that productivity dreams are made of. I woke up at 5:30 to make a coffee. At 6, I walked over to the gym. I planned out my daily intentions while I was working out. Then I made a healthy breakfast. I meditated. I showered. I connected to the internet because I disconnect from the internet between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. every day. I did that during the project and still do. I read, and then I started working at 9, and I felt so productive because I got so much done before the rest of the world woke up. But I quickly realized that I absolutely hated the ritual. I had to go to sleep when my friends and my girlfriend wanted to hang out. I had to go to sleep when I was on a roll because I was so productive late at night, and because I needed to wake up at 5:30 and didn't want to compromise on sleep, which would have been worse. And I realized that I absolutely hated the ritual because I simply have more energy later on in the day. And that led me to a lot of research where there's no difference in somebody's socioeconomic standing depending on what time they wake up at. It's what we do with the hours of our day that make the difference in our productivity. And you can think about it logically, right? Because if you have one person that wakes up at 5:30 and does their routine, then you have somebody who wakes up at 9 a.m. and does their daily routine, and the routines are the same, they're going to be just as productive. But what does change over the course of the day is how much energy we have and how much energy we have to bring to our work and to our life. I think we got to structure our day around that rather than, you know, I was in love, and this goes to the idea of knowing why we want to make a change that we were chatting about earlier. I was in love with this sepia tone fantasy of being this early riser who was ultra productive and woke up early every single day. And you know, I finally had it, and I realized that because of the way I'm wired and because of the fact that this change wasn't that important to me, it really was a waste of time. And so not all productivity advice will work for you. And this is one of the other things that I found in the project when I was kind of separating the advice that worked from the advice that doesn't, is whenever anybody's doling out blanket productivity advice, you should question that advice. Because there's a lot of people who, you know, they want to promote their book or their system so that they can, you know, get speaking gigs and consulting and stuff like that. And you should always question advice that's kind of this blanket advice where somebody seems like they have everything figured out, because it's really not what productivity tactics are the best, even though some work better than others for most people. It's what productivity tactics are the best for you. And this is true for email, you know, batching email. If you think that doesn't work for you, don't do it. You know, figure out a different way to shift your focus between email and other elements of your work less. If you think waking up early won't work for you, don't do it. If you think a maintenance day or a maintenance half day won't work for you, and you love that feeling of maintaining these elements of your life throughout the day, don't do it. And that speaks to the idea that productivity isn't about how much we produce. It's about how much we accomplish, because the best productivity advice out there will be self-reinforcing in that we'll do it, and then we'll feel so good because doing so allows us to accomplish that much more that we'll keep going with it. But we really have to figure out the stuff that works for us and leave the rest.
Right. I also think people need to keep in mind that what works for you at one time might not work for you in another time.
Yeah.
I've noticed that the way I manage my day has changed since when I was not married to when I was in college to when I have kids. It's changed because the circumstances change, and so you have to adapt to that. And I remember I tried really hard to like keep doing the way that I used to do things before I had kids, and like that doesn't work. So I've had to adjust, and that's worked out for me.
Well, that's the thing, you know. Productivity is so often a process of understanding our constraints. And so as the conditions of our life change, the tactics will change that work for us. Like waking up early is a good example of that. We'll stay wired the same way. But once we have kids, we might find that waking up at 5:30 every morning, even though it's kind of a struggle to get in bed at a reasonable hour, we might find that those hours are the most serene, and that we're able to write during them, and that we're able to have some time for ourselves and kind of charge up before the day starts. And so we really, I'm with you.
Yeah. So let's talk about managing attention, because that's an important part. You can manage your time, have things scheduled down to a T. You can be working your prime time hours, but if you're not focused on your work, that's all for naught. So let's talk about the thing that causes, like, trained us to be unfocused monkeys, basically, is the internet. The internet just sucks productivity out. And I think we talked about it earlier, you need to take a break. You're like, okay, I'll just check Reddit for a bit, or I'll check Twitter. And then, you know, an hour later, you're like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And then you're trying to get focused on your work, but you want to keep checking your email. So what can we do to get a handle on our internet-driven distraction?
It's funny because the research shows, and this was a study done by, I believe, Tim Pitchell out of Carleton University in Ottawa. He found that of the time we spend on the internet, we spend 47% of our time procrastinating. And so what that means is things quite literally take twice as long when we're connected to the internet while we're doing them, which is a ridiculous amount of time to waste. You know, if you want to get, in other words, 4 hours of work done and, you know, 8 hours of work done in 4 hours, just disconnect from the internet, because it'll allow you to be distracted so much less. But I think the answer comes down to dealing with the distractions that derail our productivity ahead of time. And for the simple fact that we're most productive when we work towards our goals in the moment. And the distractions, especially those that reside on the internet, the ones that are the most distracting are such because they're more attractive than our work in the moment. And so going on Facebook or Reddit will always be a sexier task that we want to do more than the actual real work that's in front of us. And so making a plan to deal with these distractions, whether you find you're interrupted by email or Reddit or Twitter or Facebook, whatever the hell you're distracted by, making a plan to deal with these ahead of time before they come up, and before you're tempted to fall into a black hole of them, is kind of the way out. And I've been thinking about this idea recently too. And I think that distractions and interruptions that derail our productivity can be kind of separated by two factors. The first is whether or not we have control over them. And the second is whether they're annoying or whether they're kind of welcome or a fun reprieve from our work. And if you kind of in your head, close your eyes, not if you're driving or at the gym or in public, because it might look kind of weird. If you draw kind of a 2x2 grid in your head, and on the left side is whether or not you have control over these things, and on top is whether they're annoying or whether they're fun. The ones you can't control, you can't prevent them from arising because you can't control over them. You know, whether they're fun ones, a call from your loved ones while you're working, or your team coming by your office to say, "Hey, man, you want to grab lunch? It's on me." Those are welcome distractions, or ones that are unwelcome, like phone calls or meetings you can't avoid. You can't deal with these ahead of time, but you can deal with how you relate to them as they come up. And so you can welcome the ones that are fun and try to get back on track as quickly as you possibly can for the ones that are unwelcome. But for the ones that you can control, like email alerts, one of the worst productivity detractors are email alerts, because we're constantly bombarded by them. And every single time we get one, our focus is interrupted. Email alerts, social media alerts, notifications of most kinds. My cell phone never buzzes. It never beeps. And I check my notifications whenever I check my text messages or whenever I check the time, because my phone happens to be my pocket watch. And that's when I deal with the interruptions that come in. It's kind of a natural break in the day. You can leave your phone at home if you find that you're wasting a lot of time on it, or that you're only skimming the surface of your work when you're on your phone, which is often the case for a lot of people. Or you can disable a lot of the notifications that you receive ahead of time, or download an app like Self Control for the Mac. You know, there are ones for Windows too, where you can create a list of sites that you don't want to visit when you're in your peak productivity hours. Maybe enable these apps during your biological prime time. And so, you know, again, the advice will work differently depending on the person. But this, I think, is a truth that's universal, is distractions derail our productivity because in the moment, we would rather be doing them than our actual work. And so dealing with them ahead of time, they're infinitely easier to deal with ahead of time than they are to deal with as they come up, because we can't get away from them. They're more fun. And so I think that's the best answer is, first of all, figure out whether you have control over it or not, and change how you relate to it if you don't. And if you do have control, make a plan to change it for the next time.
Awesome. So let's say you're doing that, right? You've put in the checks so you don't check the internet when you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But you're getting to work and you find yourself, man, I just can't focus. Like, I'm just, the internet has trained my brain to be constantly distracted. What can we do to retrain our ability to focus on a task deeply?
I think it comes down to the idea of to continue stumbling and to get back up. And maybe more than that, to try these tactics while being aware of, there's another fire truck. Man, this day in, it's a crazy day here. Again, that was in that quadrant. I had no control over that, so I had to change how I related to that distraction that derailed my focus just there. But that's the thing about the internet, is it's so stimulating that it's hard to kind of separate away from that. And sometimes I find the best answer is to disconnect entirely. And that might sound drastic, but when you consider the idea that we spend 47% of our time on the internet procrastinating, it can often be worth it, especially when we're doing tasks that are aversive. And so when we find ourselves doing a task that flips those procrastination triggers, so it's boring, it's frustrating, it's difficult, it's ambiguous, it's unstructured, we procrastinate the most when a task is like that. And so we should get rid of the alternatives that are more or less aversive than that. And so disconnecting entirely, as a good example, I wrote most of my book while being disconnected from the internet. And so my publisher gave me, I think, 35 or 40 weeks, but I ended up writing the book in 24 weeks because I was disconnected from the internet for most of it, even though it's pretty research heavy. And writing for me, I don't have a journalism degree or anything like that. I'm just naturally curious about this stuff. I have a business degree, and so I'm not a writer by trade. And I find writing to be, it's a fun process and it's a meaningful process, but it's a tedious process in practice, and I procrastinate on it more than any other task in my work. But when I disconnect from the internet, and you know, I so often leave my phone at home when I go to my favorite coffee shop here and have my rosemary almond milk latte, you know, which I drink with one pinky in the air. And I write best in those conditions because the distractions simply aren't there. My computer, the Wi-Fi on it is off. My phone is at home, so I'm not attracted by that more, frankly, attractive alternative than the actual work that I ought to be doing. And so, you know, eliminating these distractions ahead of time, or, you know, cutting yourself off entirely when you have the flexibility to do so, I think is crucial. And even if you work in an office type environment where you don't have a lot of control over your work, if you have the flexibility to attend an important meeting and not be available or connected for an hour during that time, you have the flexibility to disconnect from the internet for an hour or two.
Very cool. Well, hey, Chris, this has been a great conversation. Where can people learn more about your book and your work?
Yeah, that was fun. My book is called The Productivity Project. It's available. We're translating it into, I think, 7 languages by now. But, you know, you walk into any bookstore or audiobook store, metaphorically walk into an audiobook store. I narrate it. So if you like the sound of my voice, you can get it there. If you don't like the sound of my voice, the physical copy or the e-copy is the place to go for that. So it's called the Productivity Project. And my website is alifeofproductivity.com. And you can find on that website all the experiments that I've conducted and all the articles from the Productivity Project. And I'm continuing to post an article every Monday while I do stuff like speaking and consulting. But I love writing more than anything, because even though it's an aversive task and I procrastinate on it, even when not many distractions are around, it's so meaningful, and I love sharing ideas that way too.
Fantastic. Well, Chris Bailey, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me.
My guest today was Chris Bailey. He's the author of the book Productivity Project. You can find it on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. You can also find out more information about Chris's work at alifeofproductivity.com. You can see some of the metrics that he uses to measure his productivity there. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/productivityproject, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. Our show is edited by Creative Audio Lab here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you have any audio editing needs or audio production needs, check them out at creativeaudiolab.com. As always, we appreciate your continued support. And until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.